Watch your eyes.
This is the beautiful game
described by two ugly gentlemen.
Glory to Columbus.
Who are probably sitting at a soccer bar near you.
McBride's in the box. A hard cross. McBride scores. It's 3-0 United States.
Welcome to Bone and Beam United.
Happy Soccer Podcast Day. What is up? I am Bone. And there is no Beam today because Beam is with Baby. So congratulations to Brandon and Meredith and Baby William, who I am going to refer to as Baby Billy from Righteous Gemstones. If you've watched that show, it's something that I think Beam would appreciate. But in either case, Baby Billy and Beam and Meredith all are doing great from everything we've heard. So we wish them well, and he'll be back soon. We'll talk with him sooner than later. But in the meantime, I thought, why not bring on some people that I know who like soccer and who give us different perspectives maybe than what Beam and I typically do. So one of the guys I've known for a very long time, known him through working with him at Massive Report, known him just in general from being a Crew fan. And then also, you probably will know him if you are a Crew fan who's gone to any Crew games in the last, what, decade, Sam? Probably over a decade?
This is year 15.
Okay, 15 years. If you've gone to a Crew game in the last 15 years and you noticed a bespectacled man carrying cameras around taking pictures of the team or maybe some fans, that is most likely either Ralph Shadell or Sam Fahmy.
We both are bespectacled.
And you both shoot for Massive Report.
Among and we both shoot outlets. For Massive Report.
But Sam Fahmy is joining me here. Sam, thanks for coming on, buddy.
Hey, it's my pleasure. I feel honored. And wait, this is a soccer podcast?
Yeah, soccer. Are you familiar with the medium of podcasting? You should look into it. It's really...
I keep hearing about it. I hear it's a new big thing, and it's, I don't know if it's going to last very long.
Sam is among his many hats he wears. Hard hats?
Sometimes, yes.
Okay, hard hats, yeah. Among his many hats, he is the producer and host, one of the hosts, of the Massive Report podcast. Grr. Fighting noises, different podcasts. We must be at war.
Hold on. You guys literally talked about how many Crew podcasts there are last week.
I know, we did.
I should say the last episode.
Yeah.
I feel like, though, we did kind of lead the pioneering part of Crewdom podcasts
range. Massive Report kind of got there a little bit before everybody else. And then everybody else was happy to also do and glad. Like, I'm glad all the podcasts exist. It's what we need.
Also, I do like to point out that the first host of said Massive Report podcast, and it is recorded in photos, is one Jonathan T-Bone Smith.
Oh, I don't, huh? What? Oh, was I just tooting my own horn without admitting that I was tooting my own horn?
I believe there was a meeting in which he said, we really, really need to start doing a podcast.
Does that mean I'm the king of soccer podcasting in Columbus? Did I start this whole stupid craze?
If you are not the king, you are definitely the pioneer. So we'll go with that.
You know what? Pioneer is great. I would take pioneer over king any day. All right. So that all said, yes, I may have had a little bit to do with the start of Master Report, but Sam has been the engine driving it the entire way through, one of the through lines of that podcast, which, how many episodes, Sam?
We are officially at 414 episodes.
414. Not a 500. That's
no,
too bad.
We're getting close. That'll be next year.
No, I remember when it was.
Pace, yeah.
I remember when it was like Massive Report 200 and 300. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, you guys just had the 400th not too long ago. And now we're almost with this podcast. We're creeping up on 200 episodes of this, which I'm shocked that we've been doing it that long, but it's amazing how, if you just show up every week and do something, like, the numbers just change immensely.
And to be fair, sometimes some weeks it's harder than others. You know, when the team is going through slumps, when nobody wants to listen about the team doing badly, you're like, this is a drag. But when the team is doing well, you're like, this is a blast. And I think this is what we've had, at least that's what we've had after Christmas. So that was fun.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit about Sam's past and his history. So many times in jail for Sam. He's just
absolutely my rap sheet
in and out of halfway houses. Right. No, but what we'll talk about his history as a soccer fan and everything that kind of led him to this. But let's start with talking about the Crew for a little bit, because you were obviously out at the game. I was not. I was watching at home, but I got to enjoy it on Apple TV and listen to Chris Doran talking to me, which was very fun. I enjoyed that. But 2-0 victory over hated DC United. How'd you feel about how that went for the Crew this past Saturday?
They took on the Fighting Wayne Rooneys. And again, just like Beam, I am a Manchester United fan, so we'll get that out of the way first.
Oh, what a week for all you guys.
I wanted to get a good picture of Wayne Rooney just to say, I got a good picture of Wayne Rooney. To my surprise, he was very, very cold, and he was very stoic. It was like shooting a statue.
Standing there. He wasn't moving a lot.
He
was just kind of there.
Do much, to be honest. But I got a picture of Wayne Rooney, so that's cool. This was one of the weird off seasons where you did not know what to expect. You lost a lot of people, and I was lost or maybe gave away a lot of people, a lot of fan favorites, a lot of people that looked like they could be having another career year, like Derek Etienne. And you really didn't know what to expect. Everything was closed doors in the offseason, even the few times that we saw them in practice as media. You don't really get a sense of how that's going to translate. And then after watching the Philly game, you're like, okay, that was a good first half. And then they got Phillied in the second half.
Yeah. That is, Philadelphia was showing you what a full quality at their best. I mean, they're still one of the league's best. One of the better teams we've probably ever seen in league history put together. So,
and a team that brought back most of its starters.
Yeah.
Versus a team that did not.
With a manager who had a system. I mean, exactly. Jim Curtin's been there. They buy into his system. And let's hope that's where the crew are this time next year. That'd be nice. We'd love to see that.
Absolutely. So it was good to see. It took them like 15 or 20 minutes to kind of get into the game. But once they got into it, you started seeing some cheeky passes. You started seeing some combinations. You started seeing good responsive counterplay that you did not see before. And it actually felt a lot more like how Crew 2 played last year.
Yes.
So I wonder how much influence Courtois is having on Wilfred Nancy in this process. But it, you know what? It looked better. Again, we have to put this in perspective that it was against DC.
Yes.
Granted.
One of the worst
DC
teams in the league.
DC did beat Toronto FC the previous week.
But that's also one of those, like, first couple weeks of MLS season, you never know. It's all just right. going to be a little weird. And so as much as I know what you're saying, DC's still probably one of the worst teams in the league.
Right.
And so the Crew obviously don't want to be that. So good that you didn't give up a lead. I mean, that, like, signs of progress that I'm looking for in this Crew season are when they get leads, are they able to hold those leads and then win the games when they have everything going their way? They're at home, especially if you're at home.
And beat teams that they should.
Beat teams that you should. Not let them stay in games or hang around or get a crap goal that suddenly makes the last 10 minutes ridiculous. They didn't do that this time. They got a 2-0 clean sheet, and that's what the doctor ordered on Christmas. That's no problems there.
Absolutely. And it did get a dicey a few times here and there, but, you know, there are some great words that our good friend Brett Hildebrand said. And he said, the team that you're going to see in the beginning of the year is going to be very different from the team that you're going to see at the end of the year. And I think as long as, like you just said, as long as we continue to see progress game to game, I think that is going to be how we measure this transition, I'll say.
Yeah, right. I think that's a fair point. And it is going to take, it's a long season, as we both know. We've watched much MLS over the years. And I don't regret that, but it is just a... stuff you think you know after the first 6 or 8 weeks of a season, a lot of times just goes out the window by July, August. And then July, August, you think you got it figured out, and then all of a sudden you're like, whoa, what happened in September? September's always like a wild card month to me. And then suddenly you're like, this team that I thought was going to be just destroying everyone in the playoffs is barely hanging on, and they've got injuries. So, yeah, you just want to be in that right bit of form at the right time, like the Crew were in 2020. They were just
Absolutely. In
a great spot. So hopefully they can have something like that happen again. So that was the game. I mean, we could talk about Lucas El Rayan having two goals. He got the newly minted player of the match week.
I hate that.
I hate that.
It just doesn't.
You should have heard all the TV guys around here. They were all complaining about it too. Like everyone was just like, what is they actually called here. I know over to the Crew and said, hey, is this player of the week? Match day.
Yeah.
Player of the match day is what they're calling it now. That is the player
and
of the week.
And it's team of the match day, too. It's just like, ugh, why? Why? Well, you've done all other things really well. Why are you doing this?
I know why. I know why. Maybe not. But I'm guessing Major League Soccer's like, well, technically, if you play on Saturday and Sunday, that's the match week. That's the match day. And then, you know, like with the Premier League, they'll say it's match day 22, and it's like the Wednesday and Thursday fixtures.
Right.
And then they play again on Saturday and Sunday, and it's like, that's match day 23. And they... that's what they're trying to go for, but you can just acknowledge, like in I don't know, basketball, let's say. Big Ten has players of the week.
Right.
Conferences have players of the week. You can just say, like, yeah, over the course of this week, this guy was really good. I think they just want to be able to give out awards each match day to then maximize the partnerships to say, look how many impressions you got because we tweeted it out a bunch of times and you got a different one for each week. And yeah, it's whatever. It's stupid.
Marketing.
Right. It is. It's marketing. You could.
Hey, as long as they don't change the East and the West the East Conference and the West Conference to leaders and legends, I think we're probably okay.
Just give them time. They'll find something dumber than that. I'm quite sure they will find a way. Yeah, the game itself, I thought, you know, Lucas Alarcón, you know, getting player of the week, mm-hmm. as he should, 2 goals.
Absolutely.
I will say.
2 really nice goals.
Yeah, great. That's what you pay him for, right? That's what you're expecting out of a guy who comes with the caliber of talent that he brings. And I think formationally, it's very interesting to watch him and Cucho and Alexander Mattan.
You almost forgot your new favorite player.
Oh, I don't forget anything with Hale Mattan, my guy. He's fantastic. But no, I think the three of them in week one kind of were a little bit on each other's toes and stepping on each other and didn't really know where to be. I feel like they worked that out a bit better against DC. It's going to be a work in progress.
Yeah.
But I think what's interesting is Cucho Hernandez, you might assume, well, he's really the forward in this formation. The other two guys are going to act more like, you know, attacking mids. So you would think he'd be more advanced, but many times he's the one going out wide. And then you'd have Zella Ryan being the one more advanced with Mattan kind of filling in behind him around the 18. And then you had this weird, like, Mattan would get the ball, do some things, lay off a nice pass. Cucho would do something with it. And then suddenly Zella Ryan's in a spot where he can make something happen. So I think there's going to be games where, like, Cucho's going to get 2 goals.
Yes.
Or Mattan's going to have, like, an assist and a goal. I think you're going to see those games happen this year.
And you almost saw that against DC. I mean, that diving header by Cucho that just went right at the goalie. You had a nice pass to Mattan that he tapped in and also went right at the goalie. This is actually what you want to see from those basically top three people. The fact that Mattan, I think, the more he gets playing time, the more he gets that kind of contribution, the more his confidence is going to grow. Let's be fair. Whatever Caleb Porter did not see in Mattan the last two, three years, he struggled. He really struggled. And he struggled. And I covered Crew 2 for a little bit, and he struggled playing in Crew 2 because he was trying to do too much as opposed to play within the structure of the team. And I think having Lucas, I'm very curious to see how much impact he finally gets from basically Lucas Alarcón and Cucho Hernandez coaching him, like Diaz did towards the end of last season when Cucho came on.
Luis Diaz
is playing in a very different manner now that Cucho Hernandez is here. And you can see Cucho on the field directing him and coaching him and telling him where to go. So how much that impact we see from Zalarayan and Cucho on Mattan, that could actually end up being a phenomenal partnership of all three of those just toying with teams.
Yeah, I think that was spot on analysis. One thing I would correct is you said impact, and it is technically now Club de Foot. I had to make a reference to the dumb name changes of Major League Soccer. But you're spot on that. I do think.
Well, hey, we did steal their coach.
Hey, we'll take it, right? That's good. I like that. And I like what Wilfried Nancy is working up so far. Defensively, this team's going to have to improve a bit as well, and I think they had some moments where they showed a little improvement, but that's where the work in progress to me is going to be. And you are going to have weeks where the defense is all out of sorts and the offense is just not firing, and it's going to be bad. So let's just – I'm not trying to, like, say don't be mad when they lose, like, 3-1 or something like that, but you're going to have those weeks. We just have to hope that it's – a minimal amount of those in the first 6 months. That's my hope meaning basically the first half of the season is what I was trying to say, like get through the summer. And by June, July, I hope that we see defense shored up. There may be additions there. We don't know. But
they keep signing people. So,
right. I mean, they do. They're signing a lot of guys to like Crew 2 and like, you know, or guys from Crew 2 up to the main roster, things like that. But will they go out and get an international player? It seems like that all signs point to that. They clearly want that. They had Aloy Room trying to get the green card so they can clear that international spot. Mm-hmm. But either way, this is a work in progress and much season remains. So we'll just...
Oh, yeah. MLS is long and crazy. And when you think you have it figured out, you don't.
Yeah. So in either case, have you had a chance? Have you checked out Apple TV yet? I'm trying to ask as many Crew fans or people who have watched soccer. I know you've watched it for quite a bit. Have you had a chance to check that out yet?
So I actually did. I rewatched as I was editing Christmas game picks. I was rewatching the game, to which my wife actually made fun of me because you're like watching the game that you're editing. And I'm like, yeah, don't ask.
And I was there.
Yeah. Right. I actually could see myself on the sidelines.
I've always wondered, do you look for that? Do you ever catch that and go, oh, there I am, and go,
so
oh God,
as a,
there
honestly,
I am.
As a photographer, because we're always in very precarious places. Yeah, I actually, if I don't look for myself, I know like, oh, my friends are shooting the Super Bowl. I'm looking for them on the sideline.
Oh, interesting.
Making sure that they don't get run over, you know, that kind of stuff. Or at OSU games.
Yeah, right.
If especially away games, I'll look for, you know, my colleagues out there. But no, this one I wasn't looking, though I knew exactly where I was.
Got to be surreal.
But yeah, one, I think you guys, it has been said by just about everybody, the quality of the broadcast is really nice.
Oh,
that
video
is
quality
really
is
clean.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
It's so clear.
The studio show is good. It's concise. It moves along. It doesn't. Sometimes you just you feel that it's analyzing stuff to death, but they're not doing that.
I will say, which studio show are we talking about? Because there's
I watched the halftime.
Yeah,
and
which
then
I think
watched,
is
like the wrap, like the wrap up.
I saw the pregame and halftime one, which I think is the one that has Sasha Kljestan on it. Is that what we're talking about?
No, this one had Andrew Wiebe and
okay.
I can't remember the other two that were
okay.
On.
Yeah, Wiebe was on the halftime, but whoever did the pregame, I think that might be their like whip around show. They're kind of well, either way.
Yeah,
that I've liked both of those. I just wish, obviously, I'd like to see more of my team in a pregame.
Right.
I wish they had a dedicated pregame.
Well, even in the wrap-up, it was kind of the same way where, like, they spent a lot of times on some of those games, and then, like, on the Crew game, they were on there for, like, 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And then I was like, wait, what? You didn't even talk about it.
Hey, man, I know. And this is – I will tell this story again. I've told it a few times, but, like, back when Save the Crew happened and they had the unveiling – of, you know, the official announcement that like, hey, here they are. The Haslam Sports Group is buying this team. That press conference I went out and covered, which is one of the few things I ever cover. Mm-hmm. Things like that nature I'll go to. But I took my little microphone recorder thing and had a chance to talk to, you know, D. Haslam was there.
Yeah.
Talked to old Dong Arbor, as we like to call him. And that was a moment where he was feeling his oats that day, as he does.
Don?
Oh, yeah.
No, Don's always feeling his oats.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And he's sitting there and he's like, you know, it's great to see all the media here. I wish there was more of this media when, you know, before, because maybe we wouldn't have had these issues.
Says the guy where the media showed up at literally everything.
No, but he's saying because there were like, you know, five people from every station as opposed to like the beat writers and a couple, you know, bloggers. And like, he's like, why don't you have 25 people at everything we do? And it's like, one, I think you do. But also, and so I looked, as soon as he said that, I just said, so can you address why the Crew aren't on, since you're talking about media coverage, why they aren't more nationally featured on these games as one of the original clubs? Right. Could MLS do more to highlight that, to draw more interest in them? And I put the microphone in front of his face and he looks at me like, hey, man, you think I'm in control of the TV schedule? That's not my job. And it's like, you're the commissioner. You can tell whoever, whatever.
Actually, now that you say that, I remember that because I was probably about two or three people down from you. And I remember him saying that.
What a pompous ass he is. Yes. I hate him. I'm sorry. You probably can't say that. That's not Sam saying that. Sam has to cover this team. So
oh, no.
People just know that Sam didn't make any of those statements.
This is the league. And if you don't know how most Crew fans and or most Crew media feels about how the league does things to Columbus and at Columbus. I mean,
you need to
read up a little bit more. Let me direct you to a few books about Save the Crew.
Right, exactly. And as someone who's now a part of legacy media in a city that has an MLS team and has had one since its inception, if Don wants to know what happens and what causes you to look like maybe your minor league, it's things like, we've changed it from player of the week to player of the match day. That's
right.
It's stuff like that that gets, and I'm not saying that's right. I mean, I can process that and go, that's stupid. That was dumb. But like, seriously, around here, there were discussions like, what does this mean? Are we supposed to do something with this? Is this a big deal or is this not a big deal? It's confusing to people.
Right.
And 9 times out of 10, I mean, thankfully we have people here that actually will go out and cover it, but there are probably plenty of other states, like in New York City, most of their media outlets are going to be like, player of the whatever, who cares, stupid.
And they got
Yankees and you have people everything else to talk about.
Right, and you have people that will go out and cover it because there are other people, like yourself, that are in the company that say, hey, this is actually a thing that you need to go out and cover because it's important to this league and this club.
Right.
But like you said, in other media markets where they have two baseball teams, two football teams, two hockey, you know, that
it's Red they Bulls, don't have the bandwidth
Red Bulls and NYCFC are not high on that priority list.
Yeah. What do you think they're getting in New York City when it's like, oh, one of their players made it on, you know, he's the player of the match day. They're all going to be right. Like, what the hell does that mean? Yeah. I don't even know.
Yeah.
All right. Well, whatever. Should we put it on a web? Yeah. Put it on the website. Who cares?
Tweet.
No one's watching
Tweet
this.
About it.
Right. They're not. But the like Yankees do something, obviously that's going to matter more.
Right.
You want to look professional. You don't want to look minor league. And MLS always finds ways to do that. All right. We'll take
Absolutely.
A break.
Absolutely.
We will take a break. When we come back, we'll get to know Sam Fahmy a little bit more. You've heard him talking about
boy.
The crew. We'll talk about him and we'll talk about what it's like to shoot some of these events and to be out there as a photographer and just his experiences. Because he doesn't just go to crew games. He goes to other things too. We'll get all that next. It is Bone and Beam United right here on Bone and Beam United. Welcome back to Bone and Beam United on Bone and Beam United. If you didn't catch that earlier, it's a big thing to be on the podcast that you're on. It's a thing. Sam Fahmy is joining me from Massive Report and from many other walks of life where we know each other. We also know each other, Sam, because we go walking sometimes.
We
go out and we have Sam is, among other things, if you don't mind me sharing.
Absolutely.
Sam is a guy who has lost over 100 pounds. He's been an inspiration to me. And I have also lost 100 pounds. So we've talked about that and we've talked about our journeys. And we saw each other at the watch party for USA England for the World Cup
yep.
out at Zaftig. And it was just one of those moments where it's like, hey, you're doing great. And you're like, well, you're doing great. And we're just kind of catching up on things. And so then we started going out on nature walks. And now we've got a group of people that like to go do that. So it's been fun. And you've really done a good job pushing me to like get out of my shell a little bit and do that. So
hey, don't discount your impact and influence on my journey too, because one, not only was I inspired by what you were doing, but two, I made a side comment about, oh, one of those days I want to do a 5K. And then you're like, oh, you should let's do them together, even if we're just walking.
Yep.
And then that has escalated to an attempt to do 12 5Ks in 12 months and possibly more. And now other people have been inspired by both of our journeys to also do 5Ks and walk and just get out and do stuff. So, yeah, I appreciate the encouragement, but I also appreciate the friendship and getting to do this stuff together. It's always a good motivator for me.
It's been fun, man.
To do that.
And by the way, if you looked at either of us, well, not Sam. Sam now looks like an Olympian. But if you looked at either of us, you would be like, I wouldn't consider, these guys don't look like athletes, but that's our whole thing. It's like,
yep.
We're just, you don't have to look like an athlete. We're just going out walking and then eventually running.
Yes.
Like I'm obviously trying to do more of the running stuff. I like that, but we are both going to do the Crooked Shalala 4-miler in Hilliard the 18th, next Saturday. And so that's like in the evening. I'm really looking forward to that one.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Yeah. So that's going to be one that we're going to have a blast with. So I'm excited to do 4 miles with you, buddy. It'll be a
We're also doing the, are you doing the OSU 4-miler?
Yes.
OSU, all right. So we're doing that too.
I haven't signed up, but I need to sign up, but
yeah.
I'll be there. Yeah.
Cool.
Doing that. And then
the day after the spring game
on Sunday, right?
Yep. Sunday.
So maybe we'll know who the quarterback is or not.
Allegedly.
For neighbor Eric, who listens to our show, these are Ohio State references. Don't worry about them. Just ignore them. We'll move on from them very quickly.
It'll make sense here in a little bit.
Yeah. But speaking of that, so I said you're a photographer. You obviously have been at crew games shooting as a you know, journalist, photojournalist, but you now also cover Ohio State football games, Ohio State basketball games. You've done Blue Jackets games.
Yep.
What other things have you shot around town? I know you recently did like a professional bull riding was one that you
yes.
got to do.
World's Toughest Rodeo. That was fun. That was literally my first rodeo, just so we're clear.
Right. And I told you, watch out for the cow dong, because I'm sure
yes.
there's quite a few photos of just flopping cow undercarriage everywhere.
Yes, I actually had to
remove
some pictures.
You have no way to respond to that,
and it's obvious.
You have no way to respond to that, and it's
fine.
It's fine. It's okay. I'm just putting you on the spot.
No, it's I've shot, at least here in Columbus, yeah, football, basketball. I shot wrestling one time for OSU. I shoot tennis, ATP tennis down in Cincinnati.
Oh, yeah, right.
Western and Southern Open. We've shot the short, brief-lived rugby, pro rugby.
Right.
The Aviators here in Columbus. Also the brief-lived Ohio Machine lacrosse.
Which
Premier Lacrosse League is coming to Columbus in June, and I am looking forward to covering that too, because that's shooting lacrosse is a lot of fun.
Nice. Yeah, I bet you get a lot of good photos with that.
Yeah.
They all kind of look like superheroes with their like shoulder pads and their helmets.
Oh, yeah.
And like it's
and
kind of
when
a,
they're like jumping and flying in the air, it's
oh,
actually
I'm sure
it's
you get some
cool.
good action
it's
shots.
Cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I think that's most if it's a sport I've shot it. Oh, Columbus futsal.
Yes.
Which if you have not if you are a soccer fan, which this is a soccer podcast. Columbus futsal is a great, fast-paced indoor soccer. It's not like you're, you know, when you go play at Resolute or any of those places. It's played on a basketball court. There are touch lines, but it's really good. And yeah, just look up Columbus futsal on the socials.
Yeah, you can go watch games there and go see the photos. If you want to see some of Sam's photos, you can. I mean, like look for him in bylines of places. If you go look at, you know. You read articles on
Massive Report.
Yeah, but Massive Report, I was going to say, has galleries of your photos from crew games. So
yes.
You should definitely go check those out.
Yep.
You and Ralph Shadell are the two photographers now.
Yes. And if you want to see the other stuff, go to columbus-wired.com, which is the other site that I shoot stuff for.
Yeah. And then you have Studio 79 is still personal site.
Studio 79 is all the socials.
And if you go follow him there, one thing you can do is, because he obviously... He's a photographer's photographer. This is a guy who has lenses out the wazoo. If you see him walking around at crew games, he's one of those guys who might have three cameras attached to him at some point.
Sometimes,
different lenses. So he's also someone who can shoot, like, if you've got someone graduating or a wedding, he's done those. So, yeah, definitely look up Sam if you're looking for a photographer. I mean, I'm sure you still like to do that when you can.
Sure.
And then in his spare time, beyond all that, Sam is out there doing God's work. He actually works at
Literally.
A church. Works at a church. So good for him. See this, I'm telling you, you're like a better human than most people who are listening. Certainly than most people who've hosted this podcast between me and Beam, but also most people are listening to it at this point. But
I work in communications, so it kind of comes with the territory of photography and all that stuff.
Yeah,
but
makes sense though. And you now do podcasts over there, right? You like
I do. I am the podcast producer over there too.
Man. I missed out. I was ahead of the curve at the church stuff. I should have been at the church now because now there's podcasting. And then
it took like 2 years to get that up and running and convince them that this is an important thing.
We had choir and puppets. That's what we had when I was at the church. So it's now expanded a bit. So that's good.
Well, and over there I do not just podcasting, but I do all the photography. I do video. I help with social. I'm kind of like the jack of all trades of our team.
Oh, and then you also like play music?
Yeah.
In different... Guy, I hate you, Sam. You're so multi-talented, so multi-talented and nice.
I tell people that I've been blessed with a very random set of skills and experiences that reason, God just keeps putting me in places where I can use them
there
or help
go.
People. So, hey, I'm not hiding my light under a bush.
Very good. Do you want a Hail Matan shirt? Because I'll get you one to wear to church. I don't
actually,
know.
I will absolutely wear that.
Yeah, that's great.
Because the soccer, there's a lot of crew fans where I work, and I will wear my crew jersey, and people will come up to me. They will actually absolutely get that.
So your journey is something that I find interesting because the very, very few people that we have talked to, well, we don't talk to a lot of people in the soccer podcast, but you know, the soccer community in Columbus is great, and there are pockets of various different places, but there aren't a lot of people that I have known, and even though I'm sure they are existing in Columbus and I just am not in these communities, I don't know a lot of people who are well-versed in, like, African soccer and fans of leagues in Africa. You, though, were born in Egypt.
Yes.
You are Egyptian.
Yep.
And then you came over here a few different times in your youth, but mostly by high school you were kind of here in the U.S.
Yeah.
But you are someone who fluent in Arabic. You've traveled, obviously, back home, but also other parts of the Middle East. You travel around the world, different things. I mean, you're a fan of Egyptian soccer and you were aware of Mohamed Salah before many of us were, like, in that way. Like, so just tell people about your fandom there and kind of how that evolved as you've watched soccer growing up.
Sure. I mean, in the rest of the world, soccer is the number one sport, unless you're in like India or something where it's cricket. But really in the rest of the world, especially in Africa, soccer is the number one sport. And then you have something, you know, you have basketball, you have volleyball, you have handball, which you guys don't play here.
I've always wondered I wanted it to catch on because it looks awesome.
Yeah, handball is absolutely phenomenal. But yeah, so I grew up, my awesome, lovely babysitter, who is basically a second mom to me, she was a big El Ahly fan. And I'm like the screaming type fan.
Nice.
You know, women liking soccer in really the Middle East in general is not usually the biggest thing. So that really influenced me a lot into becoming an Al Ahly fan. And if you know anything about Al Ahly, we're so many times African champions. We've played in the world. I believe they just recently matched Real Madrid in the number of wins in the Club World Cup.
Oh,
now nice. We've never won the Club World Cup, to be fair.
You've won a lot of other games.
We've won a lot of games because we always have to play like the play-in game and then the second round.
Ah, gotcha. Okay.
They've won the bronze three times. So, you know, that's I guess our claim to fame. Our club, we were the 20th century club of the century for Africa.
Oh, yeah. Great. That's awesome.
We got to play Real Madrid for fun in an exhibition game as the club of the century for Europe. And
Ahly
won 1-0. So
nice. You know, so you are really the club of the century.
I think you're the supreme
club of the century. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I've watched soccer. I've played soccer since probably I was 5 or 6, through elementary school, high school, college, blew out my knee in college. So that kind of put a kibosh on that. But yeah, I saying that starting to be a photographer was a door that I did not expect. 15 years ago, if you had told me this is what you're going to be doing, I would have been like, you are absolutely joking. And that's not possible because that's not what I do. I had actually never shot sports before 2008.
Wow.
I've taken photographs. I've had cameras from the time I was probably about 10. But I've never shot sports till actually crew opening day 2008 was the first time I've ever shot anything resembling like professional photography sports.
Yeah. And so you got to start shooting soccer and your first experience with that was shooting for a season where the crew had one of the most magical teams they've ever had. Some of the best personalities, some of the brightest moments from crew fans from the early half of crew history.
Right.
I mean, that's Frankie Hadick, right? Chad Marshall, mm-hmm. Guillermo Barros Skelotto, and then why am I blanking on? Ali Moreno. Brian Carroll, even these guys that were filling in. Yep. Eddie Gavin, my guy, may he rest in peace as a player. He is still around as a human, but not as a soccer player. Yes. It hurts my soul to this day. But anyway, like, you got to see that group of guys up close and personal. And that was your first experience shooting sports, is basically following a team in one of its best years in club history.
Absolutely. I never expect that. And actually let's pull that back here for a little bit. We met at that first game.
Is that when we met?
That
officially?
Is when we met.
Okay. Because I feel like I've known you forever, but
right.
I did not realize
we
that
met
was
at
the
that first
time
game
we met.
Because I came because of, my wife's cousin Blake, who was leading Hudson Street Hooligans at that time.
That's right. I forgot that your wife and Blake Compton,
Our cousins. Yes.
And so Blake was one of the guys that Blake's still around too. He's a really good dude. But Blake was the guy back then who, if you were in the Nordeca, well, wasn't even called the Nordeca. This was pre-Nordeca. If you were in the Hudson Street Hooligans or some of these other groups and you were like, hey, I want to go to an away game, or I want to sit in this section, or I want to, you know, he usually had tickets that he was selling to get you into like what became the Nordeca when that first started. He was one of the guys you would see about getting like a general admission ticket there, because the crew would just kind of not give them, but more or less say you can sell them straight up through. There was
they
no
would
extra
do the block
fee
of ticketing for that area.
Yeah, and so that was something that he handled a lot of times. So you'd be at the bar and like, hey, Blake, a buddy of mine wants to come down. Do you have 2 extra tickets? And be like, hang on. And he'd pull out like a wad of tickets and be like, yeah, you have these ones are good. You can have these two. And then it's like, okay, great. And then that
way
guy would
before
come down.
Electronic tickets.
Oh, no, these were paper tickets, right? Yeah. I forgot all about that connection, though. But that's, yes, so we Do we meet at Ruby's? Or
no, we actually met at the stadium through our mutual friend, Adam.
Yes, our another mutual friend. Yes, yeah. That's right. And so many good mutual friends.
Yeah, so we literally met, I think, right before kickoff.
Okay.
I didn't have a credential. They let me in with my camera, which, you know, I was like, all right, whatever. This is great. And I just got to take pictures. Actually, one of the first pictures I took was of Manuel Ekpo and Steven Lenhart after they had just been signed, and they were just walking around the stadium. They were not
dressed, in uniform.
They were not in uniform. They were not on the officially playing yet. And they were just walking, happened to be walking behind me, and I just got their picture.
Man, that's great.
So, yeah, again, by halfway through the season, some of my pictures started getting around to Crew Union and Crewcher Ryan, who was, you know, back then where blogs were.
Yeah.
Team blogs were
Crewcher was another,
strong.
Like Crew Culture. Crewcher was that. That was another one that was out there that people were looking at. And yeah, it wasn't like the earliest days of blogging, but it was certainly earlier than it is now. That was like where it was starting to really become a thing for people to have blogs. And then it was enough. There was enough ease of it where it was like, oh, you can just start this like today and have a blog up tonight. Like that's where that time of the internet, that's where we were. Yeah, that's a really interesting thing I hadn't considered. But yeah, so you just started getting your pictures out there and people were like, cool, we'll post these up here.
People started picking it up. Instagram wasn't around. Twitter wasn't around, you know, that kind of stuff. And Big Soccer was real big. If you were brave enough to handle that level of things.
Brave Soccer is what it should be called. Big Soccer is what it was, yes. But that was Message Board, where it was pretty much Twitter and Facebook before it was Twitter and Facebook, even though it existed in some way.
And it was just as toxic.
Yeah, but it was like, it allowed people would just have, you know, paragraphs of posts, and then they would say, and it would be arguments about why this player shouldn't be on the bench, you know, not even that he wasn't playing, but it's like, this guy shouldn't be on the bench, should be this other guy, like, in the 18. And then it was, no, this guy, I swear I was out there, my Applebee's waitress told me that she saw that dude in practice because her boyfriend works at the team or something, he's great and you got to put him on, he should be starting. And it'd be crap like that, and then it'd be an hour of just reading these threads where it's like, they're going back and forth and they're not stopping on arguing about this.
Yep.
So that time frame, everybody was desperate for more Crew content. Who liked the Crew?
Right, right.
At that time, you had what, ONN?
ONN, yes. The great feed of ONN that was 8 pixel, not even 16 pixel.
It was, It was like watching Mario Brothers, but soccer.
It was just yellow blobs.
Yeah, you would just be like, I know we scored, but I don't know who it was.
Right.
And then you'd have to wait for a really extreme close-up to be like, oh, that's who I'm looking at now. Okay, I got it. So
good times.
Being at the game actually allowed you to see the numbers on the players and have a much better time watching the games.
Yeah, so, and halfway through the season, I was standing at the edge of the Nordic taking pictures, and this guy in a suit approaches me. And he goes like, are you the guy who's been taking pictures that have been showing up on the supporters blog? And I'm like, yes. And I started getting a little sweaty.
Oh, here we go.
And he was like, why are you in the stands? And I was like, well, I just buy a ticket and I come in and take pictures. He goes like, here's my card. Email me. I'm going to get you. Your stuff is really good. I'm going to get you down here. And I'm like, okay. That's cool. So that gentleman was Chris Keeney. VP of fan relations, I believe, at that time. So
that's someone who worked for the Crew.
That's somebody who worked for the team.
Yeah.
So I emailed him and I was like, hey, thanks for meeting. I would love to get an opportunity to maybe shoot a game one time.
Yeah, one time. Famous last words.
Yeah. Yeah. So he was like, this is great. He was like, here's what you need to know. I'll have a credential for you for the next game. Just come to this gate, blah, blah, all the information. I kid you not, I was probably wetting myself. Because it was a crazy experience of like, I can't believe what is happening right now. I definitely did not have the appropriate equipment at that time. But I walked into probably one of the greatest experiences in a photo room. I was taken fairly quickly under the wing of Greg Bartram, who is longtime team photographer.
Yeah, one of the greats.
And who mentored me into not just how to shoot sports, but also how to be a professional on the sideline, which, again, I just didn't have, not that I wasn't, but I just didn't have any experience.
It's a big thing to learn. I mean, when you get on the sidelines of games or when you're around, there's you're standing in a spot no one's really allowed to get to. And, of course, if you're a sports fan, you're like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
I'm nerding out right now. I'm geeking out. This is so cool. And then having the people who are like, hey, man, yeah, it's cool to be down here, but you got to act like you've been here.
Exactly.
And not, you know, you don't want to put the players on like, uh-oh, what's going on? You don't want to be noticed. Right. You kind of, you want to just blend in, not be noticed, and look like you know what you're doing. Look confident. Like, yeah, it's a big thing to have someone who can help with that.
Yeah, and it was, and, you know, the other photographers that were there, I think David Heasley was one, and it just like, it was a good room of like good people that just help you not just get to know what you're doing, but also enjoy what you're doing. And this is more of where I learned how the dynamic between fans and club and players in MLS is very different than anywhere else in the world. If you had told me I would be doing this, my context was of how things are in Egypt. And it's like, there is no way. That is not how that works. That's not how that works in Europe. That's not how it works in
other. Oh, yeah. I'm guessing at PSG, someone doesn't walk down and go, excuse me, would you like to shoot the game? Like, they don't have someone's just like, oh, yeah, you can just, as a fan, go be in the media.
But not just that. It's also the even for just regular fans and their interactions and the opportunities they get to be with players and with coaching staff. I mean, If you think of back then, head coach was Ziggy Schmidt. Yeah. Rest in peace. Great guy. And Ziggy did pass away, just
yes,
so we're
he did.
Clear.
Yes,
here.
Yes. We were joking about that earlier, but Ziggy is actually no longer with us.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Ziggy would like let the fans come to practice.
Yeah.
He would. Like he would have open practices all the time. Mm-hmm. Yep. Even when he had closed practices for playoffs, media was allowed to be there. And we had this like really insane access to these players. And I think that's probably more of what hooked me than the fact that I was on the sideline.
Oh,
is that all of a sudden I am friends with these Major League Soccer players that are a big deal.
And and
some of them are playing international
yes,
soccer players that play on their country's national teams. And I'm like, what is happening right now?
And I think when you say that, there might be people who weren't around at that time who are like, oh yeah, sure. You were friends with these guys. Yeah, I bet. Like how now there are guys around like college sports programs because of booster culture where it's like, I'm a friend of this dude. And it's like, nah, he's nice to you because you pay money and you're around. It was, I can vouch for you though. It was different back then. And I don't mean that in a good or bad way. I mean, there were no $10 million players other than David Beckham in MLS at that time. Right. I mean, there was no one making that level of money. So a lot of these guys were pros who had been around the block and liked the fact now that they were maybe playing, let's say, in America, where if you play in England, there's pressure, but it's this pressure of like you're almost in between two grindstones, like playing for Queen's Park Rangers, right? Which Gino Padula,
exactly. Yeah.
And so that guy coming to America and seeing like, oh, it's way more laid back. I can go out and actually have a meal and not have everyone jumping me to like get my autograph.
Yeah.
And then there was just a different level of player that was there too. Obviously, not every player there was an international superstar who'd been in the Premier League a bunch of times, but they were guys who knew how to play soccer and yet really appreciated where they were in life. I feel like there were a lot more veteran guys as opposed to maybe guys under 20 or 25. And they were just like more family. They'd like gotten to the point in life where it's like, we're starting to be like family guys. We're gonna have, you know, wives and kids. And they valued getting out and going to a bar.
Yeah.
Or like hanging out with the fans because they were kind of seeing how like, hey, I may not do this much longer. These people are really into this. And so, I mean, I had those experiences. Mm-hmm. You had those experiences. There are plenty of crew fans who got to meet at Ruby Tuesday. They got to meet Ziggy Schmidt would buy him a beer.
Or at Hooligan's Bar.
The Hooligan's
also,
Bar that was open.
Peace.
Yes, right, which was open for a little bit. And that was Blake Compton who helped with that. Yeah.
A lot of away games, players that didn't dress hung out there. And they just, if they were hurt or if they just weren't selected for that roster, they just came and hung out at the bar with all the fans. And that's not something that you get somewhere else.
Yeah.
One of my wife's funniest experiences is when Gino and Guillermo started their soccer academy here in Columbus, they were wanted to get pictures of their uniforms done. And they reached out to me and they're like, hey, could we get this done? I'm like, sure. I was like, I have a studio set up in my basement. Is that okay? Like, can we do that? And they're like, yeah, sure. So Gino and Guillermo Barscalotto show up at my house.
I want people to understand this. Guillermo Barscalotto at Boca Juniors, which is one of the oldest clubs in the world and one of the biggest leading clubs in Argentina. It's them and River Plate are the two clubs that if you're a legend of Argentine soccer, you've played at either one of those clubs.
Yes.
Guillermo has a statue in the Boca Juniors stadium, La Bombonera. Other people who have a statue there are Maradona, for example, Riquelme. Mm-hmm. Like, some of the biggest names you've heard of. And one of those guys is at your doorstep to get pictures taken in your basement.
That is exactly true. And we get down, we get the pictures done.
I'm just saying, it was a surreal time. It was a surreal time.
And he also found out that I was an El Ahly fan, and Boca Juniors had played El Ahly in the Club World Cup.
Really?
And he played against El Ahly. It was like 2 years prior to him joining the crew. So he got, if you know anything about Guillermo, he is very quiet. But then he found out this mutual connection, and he just started talking.
Oh,
and I had one of my favorite pictures of him printed. And I was like, hey, is it okay with you if you sign this for me? I was like, this just hangs on my wall. And he didn't just sign it. He like wrote an entire inscription in Spanish and signed it. And after we were done, we go upstairs, you say our goodbyes, and my wife is like, what just happened? She was like, did I just have two Argentine soccer legends hanging out in my basement? And I'm like, yeah, we just took pictures. It's fine. This is good.
Yeah.
And she's just like, I don't even know what to do with you right now.
It's crazy, right?
It is.
I'm saying, I mean, Duncan Outen's from New Zealand.
Right.
And this dude, he's now been in the U.S. for many years, and he lives back here in Columbus now. But that's a guy who, like, we interacted with dozens of times.
Right.
When we were doing our little podcast. But even just, Duncan was a guy you would just see around town and be like, oh, hey, what's up, Dunks? Hey. And even if he didn't know he was a crew fan, he'd be like, oh, I'm a crew fan. Oh, all right. Yeah. And he'd just be in, and he's there for the rest of the night if you wanted to hang out with him. Like,
absolutely.
He's such a cool guy. Like,
and for us, he's been on the podcast so many times that we knew him personally.
Yes.
Same thing with, like, my good friend, Jonathan Mensah.
Who is now in
San Jose.
Right.
You know, I was really good friends with Jonathan, and it was like one of those things where, like, I am friends with the captain of the Ghanaian national team. And if you know anything about soccer, like, the Ghanaian people that I know here, when I say, oh, yeah, Jonathan Mensah and I were doing this, and they're like, the soccer player Jonathan Mensah? I'm like, yeah, this guy. And they're like, you're friends with Jonathan Mensah? And I was like, yeah, he's a great dude, you know.
Well, that's what I'm saying is, like, I just don't think people quite understand some of the luminaries that have come through Black and Gold over the years. Like, and that's why I've always been drawn since like high school to soccer and then going to like 2002 World Cup, watching that at Crew Stadium. I finally understood, like, oh, wow. Like, I knew it was a big deal around the world.
Right.
But that's like, I don't know, when you find out that like Fiat was a big deal around the world. And it's
right.
Like, yeah, it's okay, whatever. Fiats are, I guess, a car that people drive. But then you find out like, no. Like, this is a huge multinational corporate. Like, it's as big as anything you're aware of or bigger.
Yeah.
And then you realize that like soccer, same thing where I'm like, oh, I never thought that I could travel to another country and I could just rattle off names of people I've met through the crew and like random dude in Mexico. When we went to Cancun. Guy drove us from the airport to our hotel. He saw my crew jersey and he's like, Guillermo. And I was like, yeah, Guillermo Barscalotto. And then he's like, Cuauhtémoc Blanco. And then we did that. And it was like, it was great. I mean, I just never would have thought little simple connections like that. But that's the world's game. That's why
Absolutely. It
draws me, it draws you, it draws lots of people.
And
but
even watching somebody like Miloš Teganić play for Australia in this past World Cup against Argentina. And it's just like, this is amazing. And you're like, I see this guy at training. I see this guy at games.
He's
like 15-20 feet from me.
Oh, I mean, and that's the beauty of MLS now is you are getting those caliber players. I forget what the dude's name is. I'm sorry, I'm blanking on it. The kid who's playing for Atlanta who just scored like two rippers.
Almeida?
Yeah, Almeida, right. Who was on the national team.
Right.
On the World Cup champions.
Yeah.
You can see him play in MLS. If you go to an MLS game that Atlanta's playing in, chances are you'll see a World Cup winner just run. I mean, and this kid's not 35 years old, like barely hanging on, This is one of the guys, young, like, they're young future young players. They believe is a good player, good enough to make the World Cup roster on that team. That guy's in MLS. Like, the league is changing for the good, but it's something where I think this is where I think the crew need to understand these experiences. A lot of the fans that have been here for the, you know, early to mid 2000s, we had a lot of different experiences than what we have now. So when you do things like changing a logo or adding a jackhammer or whatever, I'm not trying to go down that. I've done that 100 times. I'm just saying that's why some of us take it so personally.
Is because go through a wall.
Right. Like, we've experienced a real connection with a team. Right. And sometimes some of this stuff is like, oh, you want a connection? We know what it's like. You're pro sports fans. And it's like, I don't think you do know. You don't understand some of the connections we have. So obviously we have, you and I have some of those too because of being in the media. But I don't know. I know plenty of people who have those connections who never did any media, anything, never did any blogging or photography. And they have those same connections to these players. So
two really quick surreal moments that I've had in my experience from a soccer related point. One, getting to watch, I mentioned earlier about wanting to get a picture of Wayne Rooney. Back in the early 90s, Al Ahly and Manchester United signed a partnership, you know, sisterhood agreement type of thing. So that's kind of how I ended up being a Manchester United fan. But also watching, I've watched most of Wayne Rooney's career. I watched David Beckham's career. First time I got to shoot, the one time that David Beckham came to Columbus.
Oh, yeah.
I got to shoot that. And it was just like, again, an incredibly, incredibly surreal moment. The other surreal moment was getting to interview, literally video interview, Thierry Henry after a Montreal game. Or no, after a Red Bull game.
That was a Red Bull game when he was playing. After Red Bull's game. I was there for that one.
Yeah, and I was like, and we're just standing in the locker room talking to Thierry Henry in Columbus, Ohio.
And what will always stick with me from that moment, and I cannot remember if he was speaking French or Spanish, but we walked up and he was talking to another outlet and they had been like, hold on a second, guys, he's finishing up this interview.
Right.
And he was doing this interview in a complete different language. And I don't think it was French. I feel like it was Spanish, but I could be wrong because I know he speaks multiple languages, but obviously French is his native language. Spanish is a language he's learned,
right,
just like English. But he's doing an interview and I'm like, it just, that was, again, one of my dumb, like, kid from Ohio moments. It's like, people,
it's not
just
dumb. It's just surreal.
Right. And I mean, like, I'm speaking to someone now who speaks multiple languages, right, Sam, because you obviously speak multiple languages. I'm just saying, like, that was just, to me, it was like, I can't believe people can just go around the world and be fluent enough to give interviews to multiple outlets. And it's just the one human who just played a soccer game. It's not their main job. Right. His main job is doing something way different. And he's able to, like, compose himself and speak to the media in ways that don't sound like, you know, you're just kind of like barely getting by. Like, he's fluent. And then he just looked at us and was like, all right, your turn. And here we are talking to not just anyone who's doing that, by the way, exactly, a legend of the game.
A legend of the game. And to be fair, he was probably one of the nicest people.
Like, oh, I could not believe.
Very warm, answered every question, shook hands with everybody. I mean, it was just like, I'm like, I just shook hands with Thierry Henry. I will wash this hand, but I just shook hands with Thierry Henry.
These are just, I'm telling you, like, that's, I wish, this is where the snobbery around MLS always annoys me, where it's like, you ignore MLS games at your own peril because you miss out on moments. Like,
absolutely.
Yeah. Is Thierry Henry, when he was playing here, was he past his prime? Sure. Was he still freaking awesome to watch play?
Oh, yeah.
Also true. Did you see Tyler Adams playing now in the Premier League and you've seen him playing for the U.S. national team? I remember when he was playing in the playoffs against the Crew because I was at that game. Yep. You know what I mean? Like, saw Didier Drogba throw an absolute fit and act like he got, you know, kicking people and all this stuff for Montreal. Did you go watch that? I did.
And Didier Drogba put Kai Kamara in the leg lock.
The leg lock. Right. We have a moment with Didier Drogba where it's like, it's not just a chant. It's not like we don't like him. It's that he did a thing to our guy in the moment. And there's like the leg lock lives forever as a moment.
And he did it in front of the Nordic too, of all places to do the leg lock.
Yes, of course. There's just so many of those. I mean, Cuauhtemoc Blanco is a Mexican soccer playing legend in Columbus. He's a guy who tried to trade shirts with the referee once and like just.
Oh, he didn't try. He did get him that shirt.
He did. That's right. Yeah. And Gino got a red card in that game for nothing.
For nothing.
Anyway, I'm just saying.
We're not still bitter about this from whatever, 2008.
We got the championship. He can get whatever, he can do whatever he wants. So all I know is that's where my love of MLS, well, more of the Crew, but that's partially where it comes from, is like, we got to have these experiences.
Yeah.
And Alphonso Davies, you saw him here before he's won a Champions League anything, right? These are the moments that I think at least mean a lot to me, and that's why I love watching the crew, and that's why I love going to these games. MLS is fun that way. Any other surreal things you want to bring up before we get out of here? Because you have
That's enough surreal stuff.
Oh yeah, David. I didn't mean to make it sound like David Beckham and Thierry Henry wasn't good enough. You've had, I'm sure, plenty of other ones too. But yeah,
no,
those are pretty good to end on.
I got to meet a lot of really great people. I've got to meet a lot of really great soccer players. I've got to develop lifelong relationships like this one right here. And you know this is the closest thing to have to European soccer, where it's like it's more of that family generational feel than it is going to watch the Reds or the Bengals or the Cavs or anything like that. So it will always have a special place in my heart, and I enjoy that I get to bring what that looks like from the sideline in a way that the people in the stands want to see.
Oh, yeah. You're helping bring people into the game in a way that helps them understand it a little bit better. They can see some of these moments. They can see the intensity and the fight and what's actually happening on the field. That you don't get that when you're sitting up in the stands. Some of the things you bring through that lens is awesome. So
thank you.
Yeah, it's great to see. And now we have a place, too, as much as I get negative about the crew sometimes, like the LDC is legit. Like,
oh, that is phenomenal.
That is a... It does feel like, oh, this is real soccer. Like, we're at a real big-time event now, and it's so great to have that stadium. So I am glad we have that.
And even people who are from the outside, whether it's away fans or even local people that have not been, the first time they come in, they are absolutely blown away by how good it is actually on the inside, just like it is on the outside. Actually, this last game, the home opener, one of the steel workers that worked on the stadium is the husband of a former coworker of mine, and they were at the game, and that was his first time in the stadium it was done, like, with framing, since it was finished.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was like, I'm sitting there looking through my phone of all the pictures that I took during construction and just looking at how it looks now versus how it looked like when we were done with the steel frame of it.
Right, yeah.
And he was like, I'm just blown away. And it was fun to see it from that perspective.
Yeah.
Of this person who literally had, you know, blood, sweat, and tears into building, and just how much he loved how it is. But it's a great stadium, and if you're listening to this podcast, I sure hope you have been out to at least one game.
I would hope so.
Because
if
not, I encourage you to absolutely come out to the LDC, to the Death Star, literally on the 25th.
Exactly. And then say to Sam, like, hey, I heard you on a podcast, and then he'll go, which one?
Which one? Yeah.
Which one?
Yeah.
Well, Sam, it was great having you, and thanks for doing this, and we will see you at a game soon.
Thanks for having me. I am humbled and honored. Glad to be here. Hopefully it was entertaining.
Find him on social media at Studio79. You can find us on Twitter at Bone Beam United. Till next week, we'll see you then. This has been Bone and Beam United.